Torah Way, Northwest London. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Bahar B'Chukosai, the 19th of May. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, Parsha Theme.
Good morning, everyone. Absolutely lovely to be standing here again. I haven't spoken here for quite a long time. I was going to say the last time was winter, but it doesn't seem too long ago. But there has been a bit of time. I'm going to begin with a few questions, as usual, stay over the idea, and see how its relevance applies to us nowadays. So to begin with, three, four, five questions, let's see how it goes. Shabbos, oh, tomorrow is Erev Shabbos. Tomorrow is Shachris. Today, I'm sorry, Erev Shabbos. And tomorrow on Shabbos by Shachris, we're going to say the tefillah of Nishmas Kol Chai. An amazing tefillah, full of shvach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the truth is, if someone would look at the tefillah carefully, then you would realize an apparent contradiction between the two parts of Nishmas. Because we begin the tefillah and we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, first of all we recognize there's no one else besides you. Without you, Einon Melech, Meshiach, there's nothing else. And we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you've given us everything. You've given us light, you've given us chesed constantly. And we say, Be'etzem, the truth is we need to thank you. And the Losh is, Ilufinu Moli Shir Kayom. If our mouth would be full of praise, we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can't thank you. It's impossible, we say in this tefillah, to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because he does so many chasodim, so much kindness, throughout our lives, throughout the day, it's impossible, says the tefillah, to even thank you for one kindness. We can't do it. And then we continue. And after we've spent a few lines discussing how it's impossible to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we continue and say, and now HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Kain, therefore, a Voronship and Laktabonu, the body that you gave me, Ruach and Hashamash and Afakta Be'apenu, Hein Hein Yoyde B'Varuch V'Yishabku. I'm going to start praising you now. Make up your mind. Can we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu or can we not? We begin with and say, Hashem, it's impossible to praise you. And a minute later, we say, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're going to praise you. We can praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we can't. That's question number one. We're getting near Shavuos, so let's go a little bit in Shavuos. Chazal constantly emphasize and bring out the tremendous Mesiras Nefesh or Shvach of HaKadosh, of Kalal Yisrael, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to offer us the Torah, without a doubt, without any questions, we said straight away, Nasa V'Nishma. We accepted it. He went around to all the nations and he asked them, they all had questions, they had problems, they didn't take it. He came to Kalal Yisrael, say Chazal, straight away there were no questions. An amazing, amazing, amazing feat. And Chazal constantly discuss it, how special it is. But the truth is, if we think about it a little bit, I would look at it as a little bit irresponsible. Someone comes to you with a deal. He says, I want to sell you a house. I want to give you something. So you take out your money and you pay him. You say, let me see the house. What's inside it? Can I get a mortgage? How much is the bank going to give it to me? There's a lot of questions that have to be asked. So Klal Yisrael here, they're being approached and they're saying, do you want a Torah? I don't know. What is it? Tell me about it. Can I keep it? I don't know if I have the strength to even keep it. Tell me a little bit about it. Where was the responsibility in Klal Yisrael's acceptance of the Torah? That Chazal found this so amazing that they said this is Nasa Menishma, it's amazing. What's amazing about it? A little bit of responsibility. Think what you're doing. Look what you're doing. Find out about it. That's question number two. Question number three, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us, La'osid Lavoi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to come, and he's going to reveal himself to the world. And all the non-Jewish nations and nations of the world are going to come, and they're going to say, give us reward. Reward for what? So they'll say, listen, we understand that the whole world is built for Klal Yisrael, and everything's for Klal Yisrael, but we helped them. We built the roads. We built the streets. We waged wars on their behalf. We made money on their behalf, we built bridges, and so on. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah relates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will tell them, Yechichu kol echad al pneihem. He'll tell them in front of them, he'll say to them, you did it for Klal Yisrael. The Gemara says, Shoitim, fools, kol ma she'asisem, everything that you did, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say, Bishvilchem asisem, you did it for yourselves. And therefore, says the Gemara, that they'll accept what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, they'll walk away. What's pshat here? I agree. We all understand the goyim didn't do it for Klal Yisrael. They did it for themselves. But look what they accomplished. They had tremendous results. We should give them a reward for their results. You're right. You didn't do it with the right intentions. and it was all the wrong intention, you did it for yourself, but still, look what you did for Christ, or look at the accomplishments that you managed to achieve. So for that, they should deserve some reward. So why is it that Kodesh Baruch Hu says you don't deserve anything? Why not? That's question number three. Okay. And one more, we're a little bit after it, but it's still applicable because we're in the Omer still. The Beis Yosef says that Lamed Gimel Ba'Omer is a special time. One of the reasons given is that Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, they stop dying. Is the Prichadosh and others already ask, what type of simcha is this? There was no one left to die. All his 24,000 Talmidim had died already. So there's nothing else to mourn. So obviously there's no one else going to die. So what simcha is there? Simcha is when something amazing happens. His Talmidim were dying day after day. After all his Talmidim were dead, this is a Yom Simcha, amazing. What is amazing about this? There was no one else left to die. What's so special about it? Okay, let's stop. These are the questions. So number one, we have a contradiction in Nishmas. We begin by saying we can't praise you, and then we say we will praise you. Number two, we have a Nasa v'Nishma of Klal Yisrael. What was so special about their acceptance of the Torah? Number three, we have the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that the Gemara says that the Asad Lavoi, the Goyim, are going to try and claim some reward. But Hashem will say, you did it all for yourself, you don't deserve anything. And the Tak are not going to get anything. And we asked, why not? They've accomplished things. Number four, the Gemara in number four is Lag Bo'imeh. What is so special about Lamed Gimel Bo'imeh? L'chay, there's no one else left to die. Okay. So let's start with an idea. I think I may have mentioned it once, but for a different topic, with Rabbi Shmuel Salanter's famous words. Rabbi Shmuel Salanter used to say, as a mensch darf wissen und verstehen, a person has to understand, as mizenenish in der Welt zu oiftom, zu optom, zu nochtom, ela sutom, no sutom. A person has to understand, we're not here in this world, said Rabbi Shmuel Salanter, to achieve, to follow, to accomplish. We're here for one thing. We're here to do. That's what we're here in this world for. To do, to do, to do. Not to accomplish, not to achieve, just to do. An absolute antithesis to the non-Jewish view, where there so much stress and emphasis is placed on the results. On what is the final result? Have you come out with anything? By Klal Yisrael, it's mamish lehepach. By Klal Yisrael, the stress is, have you tried your best? Have you used your talents, your capabilities, your koyches to do as much as you can? That's where all the stress is. So many people turn around and say, he's rich, he's got the money to help others. He's powerful. He has the power. He's got influence. He's very sociable. But I haven't got anything. I haven't got the power. I haven't got the money. I'm not sociable. How am I meant to help others? How can I do things? How can I do things in this world? But if we say it's wrong, because I'm sure many of us have questioned before, why is everyone different? Every single person, we all look different. There's no two people who are the same. You take the DNA of someone, you'll never have. No one's got the same DNA. Everyone is completely different. What's pshat? So truth is, the question is a very good question. If we work with it with the view that a person in this world is here to accomplish. So then we can have a claim. We're all here to get results. So why is he starting off more than me? He's got money, he's got talent, I haven't. It's not fair. It's a very fair question. We should all start off looking exactly the same, with the same amount of koichas. We'll say, ready, steady, go. Let's see who can get the best results. But we're all looking different. I'm shy and simple. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we're not here in this world to get results. We're here in this world for one reason. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent us down, and each one of us has been given a job. And something that we have to do. Something that only we can do. And for the job that we're meant to be doing, we were given the capabilities and the talents that we need for it. So obviously we're different. He doesn't need money for it, and he doesn't need social skills for it. Every single person with the talents and koichos they were given, they have to use. That's the yesod. Let's go back to the questions and we'll see how it relates and understand it more. We start off with question number one of Nishmas. We said that we daven the tefillah of Nishmas, and there's a contradiction in it. First we say, Nishmas, that we can't praise you, it's impossible. And then we say, now we're going to praise you. So the Maggid, when I was in Belgium actually now on Pesach, so it's a Chassid Shashtot, and the Rav there said over this what I'm about to tell you now, he said over from the Maggid. So I know the Dubna Maggid, so I came back to London, and I know a lot of the Dubna Maggids, I checked, I couldn't find it anywhere. So I called him up, I said, where's your Dubna Maggid? So he laughed out, he burst out laughing, said, I don't know, Mezritsha Maggid. But I say, he says, Taylor on the Shtot, where you are. So now when they say the Maggid, they mean the Mezritsha Maggid. So he said over, we're showing the Mezritsha Maggid, a beautiful mashal. He says over like this, he says there was a king, who had a very, he had a lot of advisors, but one of his advisors was a Jewish guy, and he was very, very close to him. And obviously, these things happened. The other advisors, the non-Jewish advisors, were very jealous, and they constantly tried creating friction. And he told the king the whole time, he doesn't like you, he's out to kill you, but the king ignored them. One day, the king decides, he wants to go to this Jewish guy's house for a meal. He's a good friend of his, he wants to invite himself out. So he called in his Jewish advisor, and he said to him, I'm coming to you for a meal in 3.5 weeks' time. From the moment that this Jewish advisor heard this, he was nervous, mummish. He couldn't sleep at night. He was under tremendous pressure. He didn't know what to do. You know, he has to prepare his house, he has to prepare the meal. He has got crazy amounts to prepare. And for those 3.5 weeks, he didn't sleep anything. The magic of the big day came, the king comes, and it went amazing. It was amazing. The king was very happy. He came back to his palace, and he says to his other advisors, you see how much he loves me? You see how much he cares about me, the type of meal he made for me? And the advisors smiled, and they said, hey, king, you got it all wrong. They said, the guy hates you. He said, what do you mean? And you saw what he did for me. They said, did you see how nervous he was? You know why he was nervous? Because he didn't want to spend a penny on you. He kept thinking, oh, another pound, and another pound, and another pound. He has zero interest in you. And the king was like, oh, stop it, rubbish. They were like, I'm telling you. They said, you know what, we'll prove it to you, they said. Tell him you enjoyed it about him, you want to come back again. But tell him this time you're going to pay. Trust me, you say you're going to pay, you'll see he won't have any nervousness whatsoever. Right? The king said, you know what, I'll take you up on it. He called in his advisor. He said, I enjoyed it about you, I want to come back again. But this time, don't worry, the money's on me. I'm giving you a wad of cash, spend it, enjoy it, whatever you want. And Kachaba, for 2 weeks, they watched him, not a drop of nervousness. He was relaxed, everything was normal. And the advisor said to the king, you see, we are right. The first time he was nervous because he didn't want to spend money on you. Now you're paying, so he doesn't care. But King Taku didn't have an answer. He said, okay. By the meal, he sat there with his Jewish advisor. He said to him, tell me, what's up? The first time I came to you, you were so nervous, and now you're so relaxed. So what's going on here? So the Jewish guy smiled. He said, I'll tell you, it's very simple. He said, the first time you invited me, you invited yourself to me, it was on me to supply you, to look after you. And I was nervous. I said, you're the king. You're a powerful man. You're an amazing man. How can I, little me, serve you properly? Whatever I do will never be enough. So I was nervous. I didn't know. I couldn't stop. I was thinking the whole time, more and more and more. What should I do? How should I do? It was very nerve-wracking. How can I give you the honor that you deserve? Whereas he said, the second time around, you came up to me, you said, hey, take this money and spend it. Why should I be nervous? You showed me yourself how much you expect of me. You gave me an amount of money. You said, this amount of money, this is all I want. Don't spend more than that, because this is what I'm giving you. So what's there to be nervous about? It says the Medrash of Magid that the same thing is in Nishmas. We come on this world and we say, Kodesh Baruch Hu, we've got so much to thank you for. Amazing, amazing. Every day, the tremendous kindness you do to us. But it's impossible. We can't start. It's impossible even to one kindness we can't thank you for. We can't do it. We haven't got the capabilities. But then we carry on and we say, you know what, Kodesh Baruch Hu, maybe we can't theoretically praise you for everything you've done. But using the koichas, the talents, the capabilities that you've given me, the limbs that you've given me, the mouth that you've given me, those I'll use to praise you. Because if you gave me them, it means you don't expect more than what you've given me. So I'll use those capabilities. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says again, I don't want results. I want your efforts. Use what I'm giving you for the best results. That's pshat. We start off and we say, Ilu fidu moli shira beyond. Even if my mouth will be full of shira like the water in the sea. Also, neidu rina kamen galov, and our tongues would be like the rolling waves. Even if it would be endless, it'd be impossible to. Ein anachnu maspikin hoydes lecho. But then we end off and we say, but nevertheless, al kein evorim shebelach ponu, the body that you gave me. They will praise you. Using the koiches you gave me, they will come along. We'll use them to praise you. That's the answer to Nishma. Let's go back to question number two. Nasa v'Nishma. Where was the responsibility? Where was it? Klal just accepted it. Ask questions. Before you do a deal, you ask questions. The answer is simple. Chazal tell us that when Klal Yisrael accepted the Torah, Chazal tell us, HaKadosh Baruch says, Mi gila lehem rozeh. Who revealed to Klal Yisrael this secret? Shemalachi Ashoris, Mishtam Shemboi, that my Malachim know about. What secret? What secret was revealed? This was the secret. Klal Yisrael understood from their time in the Midbar, from the miracles that they saw by Mitzrayim, Klal Yisrael had already comprehended and understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not give us work to do more than we can fulfill, more something harder than our capabilities. Klal Yisrael understood that what's a malach? A malach is a messenger. That's all a malach is. And we are messengers, we are malachim in this world. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a message, we have the power to do it. Just like we understand, if we hear about a malach going to destroy a town, we don't say, wow, that malach must be pretty strong. Because we understand he's a malach. Hashem sent him to destroy a town, so he's got the power to do it. So we have to understand, and this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood at the time, that if we're being given a job, we're being offered something from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then the thing that we need to do, the tools will come along with it. Everything needed will be supplied with it. So Klal Yisrael said, Nasa v'nishma, we've got no questions to ask. Is it good? Is it not good? Can we fulfill it? Can we not fulfill it? Because we know if you're offering it to us, and you're telling us to do it, then it must be that with it comes the capabilities to do it. So of course we're going to accept it. The Rambam writes that every single person can become like Moshe Rabbeinu. And all the Svarim already asked, how's that possible? The Torah tells us, that no one can ever reach the level that Moshe Rabbeinu reached. So what's the Rambam? The Rambam writes that everyone can reach the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Svarim explain this idea, that of course we can't reach Moshe Rabbeinu's level. His father is far, 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 far away above us. But the Rambam's saying that every person can do the same as what Moshe Rabbeinu did. He can take his strength, his capabilities, and use it to his utmost. And when someone uses his strength and his kleichas to his utmost, he's doing exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Moshe Rabbeinu used his kleichas and his talents to his utmost, and we're doing the same thing. Obviously, we can't be Moshe Rabbeinu because we're not Moshe Rabbeinu. We're different. We were created differently for a different job. But we can do the same as him, that will fulfill our time in this world exactly like we're meant to do. When we open a Gemara, when we open a Sefer, a lot of us, many of us, before we learn, we say a special tefillah. Are you here after that? Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us yet the Shmaya to learn. We should learn properly. And in the middle, we say a very famous line: "Onu amelim v'heim amelim." Onu amelim, we work and mekablim schar, we get reward. V'heim amelim, and they work v'einam mekablim schar, they don't get reward. And it's very famous. I'm sure everyone knows it. The Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim says, "What's pshat? We work and we get reward, and the non-Jewish people work and they don't get reward." It's not true. Look around you, they work, they do good business, they're very wealthy people. What does it mean they work and they don't get reward? So the Chafetz Chaim said, there's an amazing answer, a very famous one, that when a shoemaker goes and works for hours and hours on a shoe, trying to fix it, he does one mistake, then all his hours are in the dustbin. He has to take that shoe and chuck it. He's got nothing to show for it. Whereas by Klal Yisrael, when we sit over a Gemara, when we try and work out pshat, then we spend hours and hours doing it, and then we find out we got wrong pshat, it doesn't matter. You're going to get the same reward, exactly as if you had learned the right pshat. It's a special avtocha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that when a person learns Torah, and does its utmost to fulfill HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tzivoyim, his mitzvahs, he does a vayda, he learns properly, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you tried your best, I'm giving you for what you tried. I'm not giving you for the result. So, onu amelim u'mekablim schar, we work and we get reward, even if it doesn't come out right. V'heim amelim, and they work v'heinu mekablim schar, they don't get reward if it doesn't come out right. It's their loss. That is pshat in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah. We ask that, what's pshat? The goyim are going to come and ask it lovely. And the goyim are going to say, we built bridges, we waged wars, we made money. It was all for Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara says, shaitim shavoilam, fools, kol masha asitem b'shvilchem asitem, you did it for yourself. And we asked, okay, fine, they did it for themselves. But look what they accomplished. Look at the amazing results that they had. Why don't they get reward for that? And the answer is, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give reward based on results, then yes, they would deserve reward. They had tremendous results. But by Klal Yisrael, it doesn't work like that. Reward isn't toila on results. Reward is toila on our mola. On our mola, how much work did you put in? How much effort did you put in? Did you put effort in for Klal Yisrael? Did you care about Klal Yisrael when you did it? Did you think about Klal Yisrael? Your amola had nothing to do with Klal Yisrael. So what should I give you a reward for? Obviously they're not going to get any reward. If the reward would be on the results, yes, you deserve reward. You had results. But the reward isn't going on the results. Reward goes on amola. You try, you get reward. You don't try, you don't get reward. That is pshat in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah. Coming back to Lag Bo'imeh. So the Prichodosh has a beautiful idea. The Prichodosh says that the Prichodosh asks this question. He says, "What's pshat the Lamed Gimel Bo'emer? There's such a special simcha. L'chayra, it should be a day of mourning. 24,000 Talmidim died, and there was no one else left to die. Now we should stop and mourn." Prichodosh has an amazing idea. He doesn't speak it out by Arichas, but pshat is like this: if you take 24,000 Talmidim and you divide it in these 33 days, you can imagine that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people were dying daily. It must be around 600-700 people were dying daily. Every day, Rabbi Kimi is the Rosh Hashiva. So every time there's a death, they call him up. Come be maspid, your Talmud son, your Talmud's wife. He had a lot of maspidim. So you can imagine, Rabbi Kimi wasn't a young man. And he had to go from one end of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says that the mitzvahs took place from the north to the south. So there was a lot of journeying to do as well. So every day Rabbi Kiva gets up in the morning, how many levayas are there going to be today? He has to travel every 5 minutes, another levaya. You can imagine the impact and the toll that took on Rabbi Kiva. He wasn't a young man, took a lot of koichas, and it's very depressing for him. 24,000 Talmidim have died. But what does the Medrash say? The Lamed Gimel Bo'eme, Rabbi Kiva, his Talmidim finished dying. The Chazal say that he journeyed to the south, he found 5 new Talmidim, and he started learning with them. Rabbi Kiva could have turned around and said, I've done my bit. I tried my best and I failed. I'm an old man now, let me retire. Enough. Rabbi Kiva didn't do that. Rabbi Kiva said, I've got koichas. And I understand that we're not here in the world for results. Because if we would be here for results, I tried, I didn't get results, finished, I'm giving up. I understand that we're in the world to do. To do, not to achieve, to do. And as long as I've got the capabilities and strength to do, I'm going to carry on doing. And therefore Rabbi Kiva went and he started learning with these 5 Talmidim. These 5 Talmidim are scattered and littered throughout Shas. Every Mishnah has a mention on them. Ramea, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Osman, Shemua, Rabbi Shimon. They're all mentioned throughout Shas constantly. And this is, imagine Rabbi Kiva would have said, I can't do it. I've done my bit, I failed. We wouldn't have any of this. This, says the Pri Chodesh, is a tremendous simcha that took place in Lamed Gimel Ba'imeh. That a person has to remember that if a person's not here to achieve, because then yes, he'll give up. We're here to do as much as we can do. If fails, try again. You're not going to lose out. The Rachaim, he actually speaks out, Reb Chaim Volozhin speaks out the Rachaim in Ovis. He actually touches it in the Pasuk. Im ein ani li mili, ukashani le'atzmi mo'ani. He says, im ein ani li mili means, is talking about Torah. When it comes to Torah, a person cannot say, it's too hard for me, I can't do it, I'm giving up. If you're not there for yourself, mili, you won't have anyone. You have to try your best. You have to put all your koichas in and learn and learn and learn as much as you can. But when it comes to business, says Reb Chaim, mo'ani, what are you? A person thinks, business, I'm going to work my guts out, I'm going to spend hours and hours. But Chazal tell us that everyone's panos has been decided in Rosh Hashanah. It's all being decided. Everything, the amount of money we're going to get is what we're going to get. We're not going to get more, we're not going to get less. The exact amount. So we don't have to make ourselves crazy. Obviously we have to work, we have to do our shtadlus. But we have to make ourselves mad. Ukshanila asks me when I think, is it all me? Mo'ani, it's not me. I'm nothing. But by Torah, if it's not me, there's no one else. By Torah, we have to use all our koichas. We have to use all our strength. By Panasa, though, we have to remember that's not all within our capabilities. That is the assault that we want to say over today. That a person has to remember, we're not here in this world to achieve, to follow, we're here to do as much as we can. It applies in so many different areas in life, whether it's chinuch, children come home and we tell them, no, how much did you get in the test? How much were your results? Forget the results. Did you try your best? You worked your hardest? Great. That's everything in life. Okay, I'm going to stop here early because I told I'll say over a small Dvar Torah, the Kavod Shabbos. Parshas B'chukosai, the Torah ends off in the middle of all the klolos. And it looks terrible. All of a sudden, in the middle, the pasuk says, "V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov, v'afis brisi Yitzchok, v'afis brisi Avram, eskoy v'aretz eskoy." In the middle of all the klolos going on, all of a sudden, the Torah says, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to remember the promise of Avram. I'm going to remember the promise I did with Avram, with Yitzchok, and with Yaakov, and I'm going to remember Eretz Yisrael." And then the pasuk goes back to the klolos. How does this come in the middle of the klolos? I'm going to remember your zedas. It sounds to me like a shvach. Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to remember your zedas. I'm going to save you. Well, don't say it there. Don't say it in the middle of the curses. Say it at the end. Don't give up. I'm going to remember your zedas. How's it coming bang in the middle of the clause? So the Shlah and the Dubna Magid this time, both say an amazing, amazing idea. Both of them, an amazing idea. They say that, no, it's not a chizuk for us. On the contrary, it's a taina against us. The Dubna Magid speaks out. Imagine you've got 2 guys who did exactly the same avla. They did a robbery, both of them. Both of them did exactly the same thing. One of them was taken to court, and he was given 3 months in prison, and then he's out. The other guy was given 5 years. The guy said, why do I get 5 years, he gets 3 months? We did exactly the same thing. So the judge says, it's very simple. Look at you and look at you. This guy got 3 months. I know who he is. I remember his father 2 years ago. He was also put in prison. I know the type of life that he had. And I know that he wasn't brought up in the right way. It's not his fault. He had a difficult childhood. He watched his father. He carried on doing robberies. So I'm giving him 3 months. Hopefully he'll move on in life. But you, he said, I know your father. Your father was the rob in that town. I know your grandfather. He was a rob in that town. I know your great-grandfather. He was a dying there. Where? What's going on? How can you take the special... You were brought up in such a special household. You were given so many chances in life. How on earth can you sink so low and do such a thing? You deserve a much bigger punishment because you were given much more chances. You were given everything you needed in life and you didn't use it. This is what the Pasuk is telling us. In the middle of the klalos, we turn around and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you doing this to us? Why is our punishment so big? Hashem says, you want to know why you're getting such a punishment? Because the zacharti is Frisi Yaakov, Avis Frisi Yitzchak, Avis Frisi Avraham. Because I know who your Zaydas are. I know which type of people you come from. And from people like you, from us, from Klal Yisrael, I expect much, much more of you. And therefore you're getting such a harsh punishment. It's not a chizik for us, on the contrary, it's part of the klalos. That Kadosh Baruch Hu says, that's why you're getting such a harsh punishment. So Be'ezus Hashem, we should tackle all use our koichas, our talents, and try as hard as we can, the best we can, we should have an amazing Shabbos. Good.
Bringing us back, as they mean, you know, in Imri Koise, the Laich Yishati, a mile in the Torah. That's for back to Amule. So we say like this. Last week we spoke about the din of washing surfaces which are non-absorbent. That where there's not a problem of schita, for example, formica tops, washing tables or washing chairs which are not upholstered, even to scratch off, and say for example the babies, young children come into the house and on Shabbos they make the top of the area sticky, and you want to wash it on Shabbos, you're allowed to, because the area which you're washing is non-absorbent, and therefore if it's wood, or if it's formica, it's plastic, or chairs similar to that, as long as they're not upholstered, you'll be able to wash them and even to scrub off with your finger to remove the stains and the stickiness that's there. Similarly, the same reason that we allow you to actually wash plates and to wash spoons and forks after the meal, even to soak them, which are all the things which we spoke about earlier on by cloths that are not allowed to do. But the only things we have to remember is, number one, bishul, not to use hot water at the time that you hang the tap. Should not.
How do you wash it? By putting water on it.
By putting water on it, and even by scraping it with your hand. If you've got, for example, anything which is stuck on the plate, you're allowed.
You take a plastic bag.
Yeah, or you're allowed to use something which is non-absorbent, which are the special type of sponges which do not push for schita.
Can you take a plastic bag on your hand and wash with
plastic? It's not absorbed. Same thing about achuna. The one thing you have to worry about is not to wash up, for example, 2 minutes before Motzei Shabbos, if you just finished Adashitas, because you know you're not going to use those plates for Shabbos, but you're preparing and cleaning the kitchen in order it should be clean for Motzei Shabbos. And the same thing is also to make sure, most importantly, that you don't use a sponge, a sfog, or something which is absorbent, and when you squeeze it, that you would be overchas shulem. Issa of schita. Then we described the more boimik, the nafkeminis of what schita is. What is that? The issa of schita, something that's carried in a cloth, something that's absorbed in a material. Now you're going to squeeze it, so you're removing liquid from the cloth, or from the towel, or from the shmata, from the sponge, or whatever they may be. So we explained last week that there's two reasons that you might want to do that. One reason is because you want to actually use the contents of the cloth or the or the garment that you're actually squeezing out of. And therefore you want what's inside it. You want that liquid. An example which we gave was applicable for Tzula members, that people have got cotton wool, and cotton wool is absorbed with disinfectant, and they want to cleanse the wound, and the purpose of it is to remove the germs from the wound. So therefore the wool, the cotton wool, we're interested in the contents which are in the cotton wool, because there is a disinfectant which is useful to me. And when I'm applying it to the area which is dirty, I want the disinfectant to come out of the cotton wool in order, that's a sechita, in order to utilize the contents of the cloth which the mashke is within. Then you've got the flip side of the type of sechita, which is just on the contrary. You just wash until it's dying, for example, or you manage to get your sleeve or your suit or your whatever it was soaking wet with water for whatever reason it is. And now you want that sleeve should be carrying the weight of the water. So really you want to squeeze out the waters in order so that your garment should not be sopping wet. The purpose of that is not because you need the water, because you don't use the water at all, you're just going to put it down the sink. So what are you taking? You're squeezing it to remove the contents, but you don't need the contents, and you don't even want the contents. So, we spent last week that since there's a talich, a procedure of laundering, and agam, that even when one squeezes out a shirt and one wants to dry it, that one doesn't actually want to use the water which is contained therein, but that is lemasa, the procedure of kvise, and that entails within it the part of the schita. So therefore that part of it comes in the gator of schita, as we spoke about. But it's worth mentioning that in the case where for the disinfectant, who he gave her, that's the same thing of the mefarik that we spoke about several shiurim ago, that when you take an udder of a cow and you remove the milk, you're taking something that was caged within and you're removing it because you want the milk, and the way to disgorge that milk, so to speak, from the udder is by milking the cow. Here also by the disinfectant, the reason that you're taking out the disinfectant is because you want to remove the disinfectant from its casing. So it's like a gator from a fire. Okay. So now, we're speaking about the typical scenario of something that spills on the kitchen floor, or as it would be in a mismanaged floor. And now you want to clean up and mop up, or to remove the liquid which is on this tile, and how are you going to do it? So, we spoke about it, that we are allowed to take a shmata and to put it over the area of the spill, as long as the amount that is there is only a small amount of liquid. But if, for example, it's a huge, copious amount of liquid, and you've got a lot of it on the floor, then you will choshesh that this putting of the shmata on will automatically lead to a case of schita, because the moment you pick it up, you can't transport that water, so you'll squeeze it in order to rid it, in order to be able to take the next batch out. In a case like that, when there's a large amount of water, then we are choshesh for schita. So he said like this. This is what he brings down from the Mishnah Brira, quoted source, that when are we choshesh that a person would come to schita, specifically when the beged or the cloth or the shmata or the towel which we're using is something which ordinarily we would prefer that should be clean. And therefore we're worried about it, that now it's full of water, we'll squeeze it. But if, for example, that the shmata that we're using is, as I've described it, literally a shmata, and if we're not interested in that being dry, we're quite perfectly comfortable and happy with that shmata being fully absorbent with water, because it's made for that, as, for example, a mop, or as, for example, a dirty towel, which is made purposely for wiping up that, schmutz which was just spilled over the floor, then even if there's a large amount of water, that would also be permissible, because we're not choshesh, because the person hasn't got an interest that he wants to remove the water or the contents of the liquid from within. Remind me, that's enough given which we brought. If you want, I'll just add one short thought on Bahar, because nobody mentioned Schmidt at all, and this is the week of Parshas Hemina. I'll just say the famous word. Only two verta which in the whole of Noam Elimelech, which he quotes from his father, and one of them. But the slant of it was to bring out the Sfasemis, which it says on it. The Rebbe Zisha said that the Kashuch people will ask, so he says, you're asking a question, how in gracious are we going to live and to survive if this year we're going to close the factory, there's no more combine harvesters, and nothing is going to happen, so how possibly are we going to eat for a year, 6, 7, 8, etc.? So he says to him, says, I want to write the check, no problem. I see to it that you'll have bereiver. So Rav Zisha says, what does it mean, Betzivisi? What would happen if you wouldn't be Betzivisi as Bechusi? What would happen then? So he says, just to give it a rough outline, the Rebbe Shlulam sends down Shefa from above. He sends it to Tzinoldos, he sends it to a Shefa, he constantly is pouring his bounty onto this world. That happens mid the Mimayla. The Rebbe Shlulam gives it automatically. And the Rebbe Shlulam will do so for sure in the Shemitah year as well. But that is as long as the person trusts that that's where the bounty comes from. The moment the person asks the question, and he challenges it, he says, what's going to be? So then you've actually cut off that Shefa, because the Rosh Hashanah says, oh, you're asking, so therefore the Shefa is not going to come, but I promised you, Shemitah, that you're going to get anyway. So the Rosh Hashanah says, in which case I'm going to command it, nevertheless, notwithstanding that the Bucha will come. Now the Sfasemis just adds the little Kneich, which is so beautiful on this, that we understand and appreciate that the Etzem, the whole concept of Parnusa is something that we say to the Rebbe Shlomo, I'm doing fine, do me a favor, just don't mess up. I'm doing just okay. I'm going to work, I've got it all worked out, I've got a career, I've got an income, I've got an expectation for promotion. Just leave me, I'm fine. But don't mess me up. If you go to it like that, then it's Teva. But really, the biggest chitz lederech Teva is Teva itself. Because when we get up in the morning, mandi yochaye, you have mezoyne. The fact that we've got panus is no different of a chiddush in a nest than the fact that the birds are flying and that the grass and blades of grass are growing and the trees are giving fruit and that the fields are actually giving their crops. So that's a moiradik chitz lederech Teva. The Teva itself is the greatest. When we make it disparate and we start to split it and we say, no, you should know, Teva is one thing. I go to work, I earn, tus is normal. Chitz letecha Teva. Oh, now we're speaking about something which is supernatural. So the Wenshner says, V'chiz soimri manu echol bashunu ashishis. So Sfasemis says, what have you done here? You've split it. You've taken the natural, panusa, and the supernatural. In other words, I've closed up the shop. I've locked up my factory. No combine harvesters. No plowing. No sowing. Nothing. How's it going to happen? Ah, so now it only happens because it's natural. And now you've made there's a natural and a supernatural. You've split the two. So it's for semes. So then it has to be with Tzivi, says Bechusi. The Rebbe Shlomo says, right, I promised you. Now we're going into overdrive. Overdrive means that the Rebbe Shlomo says, notwithstanding your question, that you've questioned what is really supernatural and appears to you as being natural, then with Tzivisias Bechusi, I promised Shemitah, and never mind your questions, I will still give you the Brucha because I promised. This shah is something, there's a shefer by Befraim, El Yui, Shapira, in Munks, Shia, in Munks.